Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to this. Okay, baby, you got it? Okay, good. Do it.
Look, thank God for you, Miss Carolyn, tonight, because you are a blessing. Good evening, everyone.
I've been called many things, honey, but it wasn't a blessing. Go ahead.
We've all been called many things, but tonight you were used by the Lord.
I'm glad to hear I could help, honey. You can run the show now because I won't hang up, okay?
Okay.
Or do you want me to run the show?
Thank you for opening up the show, for coming on. We appreciate you. I'll just start, and you can hang out with us if you're available. Why not?
Okay, honey.
Never know.
That's good. Yeah, do that, and I'll be a panelist. Go ahead.
All right, you all. Good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight on Stop Child Abuse Now. We started a little bit late, but hey, we're here, and we're just glad that you're here to join us. We're on scan number 3051, and first, I'd like to start by reading the mission statement. We have a single purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, we're on scan number 3051. If you'd like to be a part of our panel, please call 646-595-2118. It's such a blessing. Tonight, we had a special guest. Her name is Regular Girl from San Diego. We hope that she does end up calling in. She's a survivor of child abuse and a returning NASCA family member. Regular Girl and both her siblings were victims of sexual abuse perpetuated by women in the family. One of them was her mother. Her community was basically Irish Catholic. She thinks it started with her Aunt Lori when Regular Girl went to a visit to her grandmother's home when she was about 5 or 6. There had been violence in the family long before that, among other things. Regular Girl naturally turned to drinking and using drugs. Tonight she'll be talking about her using a 12-step process for her personal recovery. As she hid herself and stuffed her feelings, she toughened up and became comedic bully, climbing the social ladder at other people's expense. The alcohol used was her solution to the big problem by the time she was 18 years old. Relationship issues made her get serious about healing and recovery. And in spite of having a good career, she found herself struggling with just her eating disorders were severe in her adulthood. She got up to about 400 pounds and down to 125. Regular Girl recalls reading the big book, confused and still drinking, but inside of her began to question, you know, about God and the experience of God. She understood that the spiritual experience was the thing that could save an alcoholic. Even while still drinking, she began to get honest with God. Little miracles were happening. She heard God say, "I love you." And she began a 15-year period of being clean and sober. "Never give up," she says. And remember, it's all about having a relationship with a loving God. She concludes, "Just keep praying." Ooh, that was beautiful. Mm-hmm. I really hope and pray that Regular Girl makes it on here. But if not, we do have a couple of other people. Thank God tonight, Miss Carol. Woo, she was on time today. This show almost didn't happen, y'all. Period. Okay.
Well, we'll find a way to make it happen, honey. I'm surprised she wanted very much to come on, so I'm surprised she's not here. But anyway, okay, listen, you run the show. Do you have anything that you'd like to talk about? This is what we do in cases like this if a guest doesn't, you know, show up.
Yeah, so we have Ms. Darlene Clark and we have Ms. Tracy. Mm-hmm. And I know Ms. Tracy, I know you are actually doing a lot of stuff in the community when it comes to, and we talk a lot about mental health, mental illness, mental health wellness, depression, suicide prevention. I know you're a big advocate for suicide prevention. Unfortunately, I know you lost your son to suicide, and you've been a very powerful voice in the community, raising your voice, sharing his story, and also raising awareness. And so I know you wanted to come on ASCA for a while, but, you know, tonight was not a night for your show. But you know what? The way that God works, it just happens to happen to open the door. And I know you're getting to do a book tour to talk a little bit about the book that your son wrote before his passing. So, I mean, hopefully maybe you can share some stuff with us that you're doing, and then we'll go around and have someone else share. But if you could just tell us a little bit about what you're doing. I think you said you're doing like a book tour this week or next week.
Yes, yes. Hi, everyone. I'm actually starting off a book signing, and it was we moved to Georgia about a year and a half ago once my husband and I retired. So we're going actually back to our hometown where everything took place, where my son passed and everything. And so we're going there first to do the first book signing back home. So this is going to be exciting and a little bit, it was a little bit kind of overwhelming to me a little bit during the week, but God is good. God is good.
Right. You know, I know a lot is going on right now. Unfortunately, the suicide rate continues to skyrocket. And,
yes.
I don't even know how you're even, you know, I'm a suicide survivor. And so is actually Ms. Carol and a couple of us on here at NASCO.
Sure.
We've been through a lot of depression and trauma and, helping others. How are you walking this journey the way that you're walking this journey? How are you able to do that? I know that you do have your faith, but and I'm asking you for others who are listening who probably lost a loved one to suicide. What is keeping you strong to be able to continue to move forward after that?
First of all, it could only be the faith that you have and the God that you serve, because there is no way. I'm human too, you know, and I do know a lot of people that have been that are still in different parts of the grieving processes. I think I was ready to get to, I didn't rush it, but I was so glad that I embraced the acceptance and the hope part of the grief. So with my acceptance that and understanding of the spiritual aspect of it, that if I'm talking to God every day and he's not here, it's the same way my son is still with me in that regard. So that's how I'm able to move forward. I'm not thinking of it as just the death or the ending, because really it's just a beautiful beginning for other things to come about, you know. I know everyone might not have that mindset, and that's quite all right, but I have thanked God that he's been able to sustain me and keep me going. And I do have a spouse, you know, that is magnificent and wonderful. And, you know, church family, I have people that speak important to my life, people that's really instrumental in making sure that I stay, you know, as well as possible, you know, by giving me the positive vibes and connecting me with the right energy too, you know. So I just would say at this point, we just need to stand together in unity, regardless of loss or not, you know. The more we start to just formulate a sense of love for just mankind, I think we can get through anything.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that, Ms. Tracy, because, you know, a lot of times when people go through trauma or depression, abuse, the levels that we've been through, you tend to stay away from people. And that's one of the things that I've done that a lot in the past, where I've gone through stuff and I'm like, I feel alone. I don't have anybody who really, truly, really loves me and really supports me. But what you, what you're basically telling people right now is, okay, you go through this, find support groups. Don't just isolate yourself. And there's nothing wrong with having those seasons where you do need that little time for yourself to heal and cry out.
Absolutely.
But it's good, but it's healthy to look for support groups, because you're not alone. If you don't get the support, you will feel alone, and then depression will sink in more. Would you agree?
I agree. Oh, I agree 100% with that. That's the reason, even in within my organization, which is Joy Inside Tears, it's a nonprofit that I've founded for mental health and suicide prevention and intervention. So we, even with that, I have a support group, Beauty for Ashes, within the community as well as virtually. And I'm trying to get that started for his podcast, because we need to know how to keep ourselves the self-care part of it, you know, and again, and the all the aspects of making sure we're taking care of ourselves, and that does help to talk to someone professionally for to treat whatever mental illnesses may be there, but also to get together with people that have gone through and experienced probably some of the stuff that you have too, to just exchange information and to, like you said, let people know that they're not alone. This has been like, it's a crisis, Dr. Nancy. This is a crisis, a national crisis, that I don't know when or where it'll end, because it's happening more and more and more. I was reading an article today that I'm about to upload to my website, and Wayne Brady just came out about depression, you know. So we're talking about now, does it take the significant or the affluent to start talking about stuff for it to really get recognized?
Unfortunately, it's true. I know a lot of celebrities currently have lost children. I can't think of that lady's name right this second. She has light brown eyes. Her son just passed away by suicide, and and she's a very influential person. She's from back in the days, the actor lady. She has short hair. Well, I can't think of her name. I posted her on my social media when it happened. But unfortunately, it's people who are strong enough to carry the cross that mm-hmm. God is using right now to bring light to this big issue, because before it wasn't an issue, right? But he knows
right.
that we have the platforms to talk about it and to bring
yes.
light, and not to bring light, to bring resources and bring support. That's one of the things that I love about NASCA. I'm going to just say one thing. First, I want to say happy Veterans Day. I know your son was in the force.
Army National Guard. Thank you.
Yeah, so
thank you.
Thank you for your service, and thank you for your continued service as you represent him. And then we do have Ms. Darlene, and we also have Ms. Carol. She's the vice president of NASCA. She's on the call as well. So I don't know if they have a comment or if they have questions, because they don't really know your story. But
okay.
I want to open the mic if anybody wants to ask a question or make a comment. Join us.
Well, I'll say something here. Well, people have to realize, first of all, that they have a problem. I'm an alcohol drug addict, but I haven't, my last drink was in 1981. My fingers were swelling, and my kidneys were pounding. I couldn't even drink a glass of wine, okay? And I have Italian in me. That's very strange, okay? So, you know, I was in trouble, and I knew it. I knew I was in trouble. So I detoxed myself. Now, I was working in detox. Oh, yes, I was, because I started in the 70s until 95 and working in different areas of social services. So I didn't know if I was going to seize or whatever, because I'al seen many, many, many grand mal seizures. But I knew that this is my body telling me, hey, you started drinking when you were a kid, trying to, you know, solve your own problems, because so many of us have done that, and take the pain away. You know,
right.
So I had to stop. And boy, was I scared. And I had two children. Yes, I did. I left my husband. I had two children. And I put them over with my mother, and I detoxed for 3 days. And as far as I know, I didn't seize, all right? I don't know what happened. All I know is I went back to work feeling very, very strange. But I didn't have a drink after that. So, you see, we have to come to the realization that, yes, you know, things happen, because you said we have to move on, and we do have to move on. Otherwise, we stay stuck. So, therefore, I learned a very valuable lesson, you know, from going through, you know, the detox and having to do that, that I couldn't drink. And anyway, what's the difference? The next day, your problems are still there anyway. You see, the same thing with smoking. People figure if they smoke, what do? They grab for a cigarette after they eat. They grab for a cigarette after sex. They do. They grab for a cigarette, you know, for this and that. And whatever it is was there before you took the cigarette. So it makes absolutely no sense. So see, we have to get to the mind point of we have to decide ourselves. People can't make another person stop drinking. They can't. I've watched people die in front of my eyes, and not just from drinking. They were dually addicted. And you can't stop them. You can only talk to them when they're sober, hello, whenever that is, and do the best that you can, you know. And I lost a lot of clients that way, because they just didn't get it. They didn't want to live. And now, with the way the world is, okay, with all the problems that we're going through and facing in the world, I'm noticing, because I'm the night owl for NASCA, and I get telephone calls like in the AM, people are going backwards in their healing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem is laying there. And as far as the suicide rate, the youngest I've heard of so far, I personally, is 12. My nephew through marriage with my second husband, don't know how to pick one on this. But anyway, he was only 11.
All right,
and that was years ago, and he had a psychiatrist. So if you're going to commit suicide, and you find a way to do it. And unfortunately, children now today, from the age of 12 and then up to 45, they say that it's very high. 25 is very high. 45, up to 45 is very high. Then there's a lag. And then the elderly, okay, are also committing suicide.
Yeah, it's a variety of ages where the statistics are high. But what we need to do, I think, first and foremost, like I said, we have to end the stigma associated with it so that we can get people the help they need. They can be comfortable enough to get the professional help or to go to a friend and say, hey, I'm really feeling depressed. I thought about taking my life, you know, because those things you just don't want to say to someone. You just wouldn't want to say that without them not really taking you seriously, but wanting to also probably distance themselves from you.
Right, right. Well, what I've noticed, see, I have, of course, I was trained for this, but I use my cell phone right next to my phone. And I was telling somebody about this today because they asked me how I handle that when people call in who are suicidal. They get my number. I don't know why, but they get my number. I guess they go on NASCA and sometimes word of mouth. But I get all kinds of information from them. And if I really believe that this person is in heavy-duty trouble, then I call 911. And I did that for a 17-year-old girl maybe about 6 months ago. And I said, didn't you say you lived on Elm Street? And she said, what? Elm Street? No. I live on Maple Street. Okay, ding-dong, I got Maple. And I saw her telephone number, so I knew her area code. There are things that you can do, and then I called the police. I knew what town she lived in, if she had told me. Because I said, I'm in New Jersey. I know I said I'm from New York because I was born in New York. I said, but where are you at then? Just lighthearted, lighthearted. There's ways of handling that. So I never,
right.
ever let someone off the phone unless they hang up on me. if I feel like they're truly, in crisis. So that way, she was in a foster care home and she had gotten pregnant and she didn't know what to do and she just wanted to die. That was it. So I knew that was a bad situation. Okay, you don't mess around with that. You make a phone call. So I said, we've been talking so long, I have to go to the ladies' room, I just do. So I quickly dialed the police. I didn't want her to hear me, so and in her area, and I got that. And they went over, and they figured out where she was. She told me a number, and it was the right number. So they got her, and they worked very quickly.
Yeah, that was great. That's a great, ending to some stories that we don't hear that type of ending to,
I know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the sad part about the whole thing. But you did say early on that if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. They're going to find them to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've found places that I worked at, I found them that way.
Mm-hmm. So I see Darlene's on the line. Darlene, let me see. Hi, Darlene. I don't know if you can hear us or if you're just listening in.
She's trailing tonight. Yeah, she's trailing tonight.
Okay.
So it'll be just the three of us, and I got to keep my computer alive here to keep us all alive. Wait a minute.
Okay. Well, thank God Darlene's helping over there. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you have a comment or anything, let us know, Ms. Darlene. But,
I was making a phone call trying to call regular girl. So I left her a message.
What did she say?
It was just a message that I had to send. I guess she didn't recognize my number or whatever. So that's why I kept muting myself on the
I kept on muting you. I'm like, why is this thing muting? Right. Oh, Lord. Thank you, Donald.
Oh, that's right.
I kept muting myself because I was like, what if it comes back and starts hearing me? You know what I'm saying to her? You know what I'm trying to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why you're clicking. All right. I need to follow the flow. All right. Well,
okay.
I wanted to to check with Miss Tracy. I don't know if you feel like, I know you shared the story a couple of times, but I don't know if you feel like sharing a little bit of the story with us about your son, or what part of the story you would like to share tonight, and anything that you feel comfortable sharing about his story that God puts in your heart that could be helpful to other people listening, not just parents, but, you know, there's a lot of parents going through this right now. They're dealing with grief, and, you know, I do the healing conversations for the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention, and I have some people that haven't called me back yet. They're, like, really having a hard time in the process of healing, but if you can, Simone, or share something that God puts in your heart, that would be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what God would just have me to say that at this moment that there will be, I guess that's too, while my organization is called what it's called, there will be joy eventually inside the tears that we do mourn for those that are lost. I think when we're kind of at that point where we don't know what to do and we don't know where to turn and we don't know where to go to find these resources, like you said, the American Foundation for Suicide is one, you know, NAMI is a big one for resources, but like I shared with you before about my son was an adult, so he wasn't living with me during this time. But when we would see each other, everything was fine. He was just a beautiful soul. He had two careers. He was 21 years old at the time that he had taken his life. I personally didn't see any signs, you know, so I couldn't see probably what someone else that probably could have been around him every day saw, but he was functioning on the level that he should have been. Matter of fact, a level higher than most 21-year-old with two careers, one being preceding him in death, a sergeant promotion in the National Guard, and two, he was a lineman, apprentice for Cleveland Public Power, honor student, ambassador for people. I mean, we can go on and on and on with accolades, but at the end of the day, he might have been, only thing I can say, it could have been an overload, him being the anxiety, overwhelmed, because we did train him for excellence, you know. So I know what I'm finding out from talking to many parents, the children in these generations are not like we were or built, you know, and if I can say built like we were and the people that preceded us before us was, you know, because we've been able to weather a whole bunch, you know, but their spirits are broken easily. This new generation, they, you know, like you said, you have so many different things now with the media and maybe bullying and maybe all these things that add to the pressures that they're dealing with in adolescence, that, and they don't really know how to process it or try to manage all that, you know, on top of trying to, you know, be the daughter or the son or the, you know, or trying to have relationships, and it's just too much for them, you know. So I can just say, just by me, you know, knowing my son the way I knew him, I would not have ever thought that this would be the case. But then at hindsight, I can say probably it was not now so surprising, because maybe it was a lot on him. You know, I never tried to try to figure it all out, because I just asked God to keep giving me strength. But it's the pressure. I mean, we're more apt to deal with more things than this new generation is. I'm trying to figure it all out, because I'm hearing a lot of stories from parents that the children are, they're becoming wiser in the wrong ways, but weaker in so many other senses. It's
well,
true.
There's so many mixed messages, all right, today. I mean, look back to when we were kids. And I'm the oldest one on this panel, so I can tell you. I mean, we had to be home, you know, when the streetlights went on. Bill and I often discuss this. And we didn't think about pedophiles. Well, we never even heard of them, for God's sake. And if there was a child who was sexually abused or any of the abuses that we speak about, okay, they just kept it quiet. They didn't talk about it. So kids couldn't learn, and they weren't taught either as children, and I certainly wasn't taught at all about anything about safety. Teach your children about safety. Schools want to teach kids something. Teach them how to keep themselves safe, the red flags, not this other stuff, and I won't go into it. Because kids, the mixed messages, remember, children's minds are fragile. And until they're into their 20s, they say, now I just heard 26. I do a lot of research and so forth. And that to me is like ludicrous. When I was 26, I had two children. I was a mother and I was working. And, like, it's all so different.
Oh,
it's all
very
different.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the point. That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we were raised, I know about the streetlight. I know about the village. Raising the children, not the social media and the cell phone. Raising the children, you know, the games or the whatever, raising the children. I knew about the village. So unfortunately, some of us, I'm not saying that keeps us from going to, like my son died by suicide. He had a village, even more safer than not. But I know that I don't take any guilt upon myself, because as we know, whatever someone is going to do, if it's in their mind, they will do it. So I didn't share into taking it on me, you know, as a parent, because we easily can fall under that, and this causes us to be depressed. You know, what did I do wrong? Where did I go wrong? I failed him, you know, or I failed her. And, you know, we could keep going on and on with that and let that imagination and the stuff conjure up in our minds. And then we're at a level where we need definitely more help.
That's right.
It's so important. So important. Even, first of all, I don't even know. I know that what you're doing to continue to rise up and share, testify, support, minister is so important right now, because the numbers, like, you know, when we say this, I don't want people to really think, like, you know, sometimes you hear people saying something and they don't take it lightly. Some of us are survivors. Some of us, I lost my sister to suicide. Some of us have lost people to suicide, loved ones to suicide, or we may know someone who has. And so this is something that's getting closer to home. And so right now, this is, you know, people are becoming desensitized, and they're not, like, hearing it until it hits home. And unfortunately, right now, some of the people that are being affected are people who are celebrities or people who have the platforms, you know, to talk about it. Because it's like nobody's really listening. Nobody's taking it really seriously. And I know you haven't heard some of our testimonies, some of us that are on the line, like childhood trauma testimonies. But when you hear some of these stories and then you hear why some people tried to take their lives, and this is separate from your son, because his reason is probably way different than ours, but I'm talking about our reason, because we're on this call right now, and this is Stop Child Abuse Now, and also we talk about mental health and suicide, all of that. NASCA has a lot of resources as well, so I know we mentioned a few places, but NASCA, we have a lot of resources on the website. Ms. Carol, she could probably go a little more in depth as to where they are on the website, because she goes through the website like a fine-tooth comb, and she shares the information on some of her shows. But, you know, like I said, this is to address and to bring light to and to really let people know, like, hey, talk to your family about this. Talk, you know, we don't talk about it. We don't talk about it. Sometimes before it happens, we don't talk about it. So when people are going, when our kids are going through it in this time and age, and, you know, and I know one of my children made a comment to me, like, you don't know, you know, my youngest child, actually, I'll just say that, made a comment to me, like, you don't know what I go through, what I'm thinking about sometimes in that room. And, you know, it came, like, I'm here on the radio talking about suicide prevention. I'm here advocating. I'm here at events. And it's been, like, even something that's happened in my home that, like you said, if you want to prevent something, sometimes you can't. But just talking about it, where back in the days, we didn't talk about it. Our parents didn't talk about it. Nobody felt comfortable talking about it. It was kind of taboo, awkward, weird to talk about. But we're understanding today that we're becoming educated that talking about it allows us to express certain things and to create a healthy, safe environment that if the person needs some help and support, we can get them the right resources as we drop some of the places, NASCA, American Association for Suicide Prevention, NAMI, and a lot more others of our organizations that have resources. You're not alone. Not only that, there are people who you can call on the NASCA website. There's a list. Like Ms. Carol said, she's a night owl. You know, some people just need a call. They're, like, feeling bad. They're feeling alone, especially during the holidays. This is the time to talk about it.
Amen. I agree.
Yeah.
This is the main
I'll tell you what.
Although,
let me speak a little. Let me speak to you a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Because, you're quite right. The holidays are coming. And it's already showing on the people's faces, you know. You go out, you see people, and a lot of them look sad. A lot of people look very sad right now. And, you know, one thing we do have, and I offered this gentleman, Bill had this man call me yesterday. And we do have the programs. You see, you said earlier, and this is so true, they have to understand that they're not alone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they already feel alone. We as survivors, we all went through that. And some survivors still go through that, depending who they are and how long they've been on, as we call it, you know, our journey, okay? But we do have programs over to the left-hand side, and it's so important, especially around this time of the year, that people understand. You see the word programs. And all the way over to the left-hand side, just scroll down a little bit, and you'll see programs. And then there's other ones that go across the page. But right here now, you're dealing with programs. You click onto it. You see the world spinning around. You know you're in the right place. And we do speak to people from other countries, like Down Under, or the United Kingdom, Vietnam. Some guy called in from Israel one night. No, I think he's called in quite a few times now I think of that. Anyway, they call in from all over the place, and the United States is there. And what you do, okay, I'm New Jersey. I'm living in New Jersey. So you click on to your state. Everything's alphabetical, by the way. It's very easy. You click on to New Jersey, and New Jersey opens up. And, oh, my God, even that's all alphabetical. It starts from A and goes all the way down as far as it goes. There's some that are towns and others that are counties. I'm in Warren County, so you click on the Warren County, and then you can find where the nearest program is. And like AA, there isn't a sign outside, you know. They don't advertise it that way. But there's a telephone number. It tells you about the program. And a lot of times you can get programs that are maybe 10 miles or even less away from you. And so you just call that number, and they can guide you. And most programs, I'm going to say most programs, do not charge. I have seen some that charge $50. I don't even know if they exist anymore, to be honest with you, because, you know, every state, there's so many states, so much to look at. But for the most part, they don't charge. Or maybe they offer maybe they'll send a hat around. If you can put a buck in or something, and that goes for the coffee and the cookies and the, like an AA type thing. But you see, these people, they go in, and they feel much better because they're with people who have the same problems that they do. Some can be for domestic violence, and that's male or female, okay, because men do get hit too, all right? And then you have those, it's all for sexual abuse. You just go down the line, and you'll see, even in your own state, and some states offer more, all right, but that there are programs, absolutely. So over the summer, I guess it was, one of the guys I sent down South Jersey, because he was near that, he called me up and he said, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. I can't thank you enough. So that was good to hear that. So the programs there evidently are pretty darn good, you know, because I get good feedback. Usually it's in an email. But this guy actually called me back. That made me feel really good. And I had sent the other one down there also, and they didn't live near each other. So one went one way, one went the other way, but they were both happy. So there you go.
Well, that's important because people need to know where to get resources and where to find the help, where to find the support. I think that's like, mm-hmm. I feel, like I said, people feel alone. They feel that nobody understands, that there are no resources. I wanted to ask, I know you were getting ready to say something. And I wanted to know what you were actually getting ready to say. Ms. Tracy, you were about to say something?
Uh-huh. The conversation is so rich, I might have just not, my
it's
train
good.
Of thought.
Resources.
Yeah,
I know.
It's always, I mean, it's so rich and it's so good. I mean, and I'm just, you know, it's almost like I'm just like and just waiting for everything that just the overflow of what you know, because I'm getting all the knowledge and the information of other things that, you know, doesn't necessarily affect me, like you said, like the whether it's sexual abuse or drug and alcohol addiction, things like that. So this is just a plethora of different issues, you know, that are being shared or concerns or maybe things that we've gone through, you know, experiences. So I probably don't even can't remember right now what I was going to say in that regard, but I'm just so grateful for a program like the platform you guys are using to reach others
NASA.
And to have people on NASA, yeah, to help people share, to allow people to share and allow people to you know, like you say, let this stuff out, because, you know, once we become more transparent and the more we talk about it, I know mm-hmm. it takes a lot of the burden, you know, or a lot of the hurt or sometimes the guilt, sometimes the shame, you know.
Shame.
Once we realize that there's liberty and freedom in just tell it, be truthful, you know, be transparent. It is so much more you know, just a release, if you will, you know, so that you can be free, because those are the things that keep us bound in these emotions like depression and anxiety, because we can't lose, you know, that the pain or the hurt. So we need to be set. We need to be free. We need to be free. And I think this platform allows people to be free.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the stories.
Yeah.
Because if we don't tell the stories, this is why so many things will perpetuate a continuum of all these things.
Right. People feel like they're in bondage. And I normally tell people, I'm like, let the person, and I normally say this, you know, a lot of times when you do sessions and, you know, let's say you're like in a Christian setting, a lot of times people feel judged. They feel like they can't share their story because you're going to get that, but the Bible says and that's it. And, but
yeah.
I tell people,
yeah.
You know what, let the person first share their story. Once they get it out, then you go into, you know, scriptures and you go into what the word says and you go into the healing. But before you go into the healing, the person needs to unload. Because once you unload, you can breathe. It's like that weight is off, right? You can cry. You can cleanse. You can let go. And then you can hear. Then you can be free. When you are trying to share your story and then they cut you off with the no, because the word says, and no, that's demonic. And, you know, then you're like, forget it. I have to hide. And you don't want people to hide their truth. You don't want them to hide their pain because you want to be able to catch it. And you want to be able to catch them before they go into a deep depression or take their lives. You know, I know when I was fighting that spirit, I felt like these people are so judgmental. They're so rude and nasty. They're so mean. I can't tell my truth. And that was just some of the people that I was surrounding myself with at that particular time. They were holier than thou. And so I didn't have the freedom to really say, hey, this is what I'm going through. Hell, I'm about to kill myself. I'm sick of the world. I'm going through this right here. I couldn't do that in a free space. I felt ashamed. I felt judged. And I felt condemned. And I felt set up. And I felt talked about. And I felt, you know, it's like, oh, her, celebrity stylist, she's going through that. And they decided to dog me out. And it was like, yo, don't worry about my what I did and what I accomplished. And I hurt.
Yeah.
And I've been through trauma that you don't know about, trauma that you don't even associate with my success, because the success that I built in my artistry was to run away from my pain. It was what helped me run from my pain. So a lot of times you'll see so many successful people, and we know actors and so many people who have taken their lives who are so great in their artistry, and people are like, why would you do that? And you're so gifted, and you're so talented, and you're so rich.
Right.
Because you know what? They're running away from something that happened at some point, or they're running away from what they're going through right now to the other side that makes them look so great. But you're sometimes you're not even trying to look great. You're just trying to run away from that past or that pain, and you end up just ending up great. But you're still not really dealing with that inside pain. And
you're not
now
you're wealthy in finances, but you're spiritually or you know, mentally and emotionally broke.
Yeah.
You know,
and you can't even be honest about your pain because now you're really going to be judged because you're this title. You have this name to live up to.
Exactly.
People suffer in silence. Isn't it stupid? It's not fair.
Can I?
Yeah.
Can I say something?
Yeah, Ms. Darling.
Absolutely.
Yes. I want to say how I can't even go back to church or anything like that because even when I was married and stuff, it was even worse where they were actually telling me that it's best let my husband kill me. I'm such an immoral person when they were hearing some of my story.
Oh, my Lord. That's horrible. Mm-hmm. That's not true. But
yes, I know. And I ended up leaving that place. I was suicidal. I was thinking that if it's my only way, you know, I'm not going to let him kill me, so I'd rather kill myself. So I was suicidal in that way also, just because I didn't want him to have the benefit of doing that. Plus the fact of when I remembered some of the devastating memories about the murder of my first child. When I first remembered that, I was suicidal. Heck, I could not reason or rationale. There was no way. I didn't know how to deal with that kind of horrendous thing, seeing that happen. I was devastated, and I didn't have anybody to fall back on. You know, of course, I shut it out. I blocked it out, and then when I remembered it while I was married, but instead I got beat by my husband for letting him know that I remembered all that. And it was like, you know, I had no kind of, even though I had a good therapist that believed me, a psychiatrist, when I go back home, what kind of stuff you're around in between the times of that therapist, and it's bad. And then my kids were witnessing the fact about mama being so really upset, you know what I'm saying? And we don't really know what's going on, and I feel bad about being emotional around them. I didn't know how to take this, you know? You know, when you're having them flashbacks to the past and then you try to be okay for the kids around you, but I know that they sensed, you know, my turmoil, you know, because I couldn't be still. There's a lot of things that goes along with when you're depressed and you get devastating news, and it's so what I ended up doing, I ended up driving myself to the hospital and told them I was suicidal, you know, because I didn't want to do that to my kids. And,
you know, it was just devastating.
I didn't know, I didn't really know, and I was mad at God because I used, y'all don't try this, I just, God protected me, he wouldn't let nothing cut me or nothing. I tried everything to try to kill myself, and nothing worked. And I suffered a gun. I didn't have one of those, so thank God. But
thank
I tried to get nice pills and everything
thank
else.
Thank God, for sure.
Yeah, and so I said, well, I'm going to the hospital, you know, and so I drove myself to the hospital. But if I didn't have that same psychiatrist in the hospital, you know, he really helped pull me through a lot of this. And he was very encouraging to me. I was used to not being listened to. He was the first one in my entire life who believed me. And once he believed me and was telling me, I says, well, how could you tell that I'm not lying like everybody else is saying that I'm lying about this, right? I said, how can you know that I'm not lying about this? He said, because when I ask you a question, you answer it right away and it fits in. A lot of people who answer right away and it don't fit in, I know they're lying. He said, regardless of how horrible it sounds to hear what had happened to you, it still fit in.
Yeah.
And if it would not have been for him, he really turned my life around. He says, if anybody calls you crazy, he says, they don't need to think that, because he said, just one thing that happened to you would normally send a person to a mental institution the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. And he says, so you're a damn strong, good, I'm sorry for saying the word, but you're a damn good, strong person with everything that you went through, and you're still surviving outside of hospitals and stuff. You know what I'm saying? So this kind of thing was the kind of stuff I needed to hear, you know?
Right, right. Well, it's so many things that we don't want to take for granted, you know. Now, like you said, the things that you have experienced and the things that we all have gone through, all of it has equipped us for something, you know, and all of us being here in our different strengths and our different forms of expression, it just gives us the power that we need and that resiliency to keep going and live another day, to tell these stories over and over and over again, because we've all lived. And people that'll say nothing has ever happened to them, or, oh, I don't understand, keep on living is what I tell people. Keep on living, because we just don't know where our time, or that cross to barriers, or that road, that timing for anything to happen to anyone, you know, because I was hearing the same thing. Oh, wow. Well, oh, how are you still? If it was me, I don't know. That's probably why it's not you. That's how I was feeling. That's probably why it's not you. You know what I mean? Because everybody will be like, oh, my.
And with this church that I went to recently, I gave them another chance, right? And so I said, well, I need to go in there, and they need to learn compassion instead of judging about suicide, saying it's a sin, right?
Mm-hmm,
so I said,
how
about we, you know, start going to the people at suicidal and being there for them? Don't just go and say it's a sin to do this. My goodness, you know, we made you God to judge a jury and all that type of stuff, you know? We're there for compassion, to show love, to show strength. And I told them that God basically sent me to this church to help teach them compassion. And instead they said the things that I said, how God worked through my life. They says, God only works through the Bible. He can't work through your life. And I'm like, what? And that's interesting. I don't go to that church no more, basically, okay?
Well, I'm glad for you. Because again, we're all bodies, and we're not trying to turn this into, I'm sure, a whole church sermon or a church programming, but we are all the body with many members. All of us are extensions of the uniqueness and wonderfulness about how God made all of us.
Right.
You know, flaws, scars, whatever. We're all connected. So it's unfortunate that some, like you say, may have the compassion. Some may not, you know, because everybody is not, you know, where others may be. But I'm just so thankful that I know what I know, because that's all we can know is what we know. But I know that
exactly.
We're telling the stories to help heal those that are hurting. And like you said,
exactly.
Someone... You recall, therefore, the compassion, and whether they want to receive it or not, you planted the seed.
Right.
There are some people, okay, because my mother was an atheist. Oh, boy. So I was an oddball from day one, I guess. I met Billy Graham in New York City when I was 5 years old, and he was quite a guy. And I went up to be saved, too. I'm 5 years old, and I went up to be saved. I don't know what I'd done wrong, but I went up. And he gave me a Bible. He did. And it's a beautiful Bible. And I put my little – I was only 5 years old, so I put Carol in there, C-A-R, but the R was backwards. I was 5 years old. And my brother stole that Bible from me. And by the time I got it back, it was all in shambles, but I keep taping it together because it was so important to me, okay? And now God does say in the Bible, you don't go out and preach on street corners. He says you go behind closed doors. And so my brother, because I believed in God, and my mother, because I believed in God, hated me. That's only one of the reasons. I was not a member of that family. I found out years later my mother got raped and out I popped. Okay. Gee, I said that fast, didn't I? So anyway, I was always the outcast. And then to believe in God, oh, my God, to believe in God. So my mother used to sit at the table and have these debates with me. And I was just a kid. And she'd say, well, if God is real, if there is a God, then how come there's so many hungry people, I'll use India, over in India? Why does this happen? And why does that happen? And now I'm just a kid. I mean, she started this when I was like, well, I don't know, maybe 13 years old or something. And, of course, I didn't have the expertise or the, you know, I wasn't accomplished enough to really answer all of these questions. And then one day I did say to her, listen here. I think I was probably about 15 by that time. I said, look, Mom, either you believe or you don't believe. But one thing I do know is if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be sitting here. No more conversations because of the life that I had gone through. And, you know, which was disgusting. But anyway, the point is I'm here, I'm standing, and I still have a mouth. Yes, I do. You know, so.
That's right.
So I don't go around and
we
preach,
feel
what
I'm-
you know.
No, it's not necessary. I mean, it's not even necessary because
whatever we've
gone through, that's the testimony right there. We can't have a testimony without us being tested, period. Mm-hmm. We've all been tested. We've been tested. So this is how we can stand and have our testimony. So we don't need, we don't have to preach. We got a testimony.
That's right.
Boy, were we tested. That right there was
the sermon. That part. That
period,
part.
Like you said.
Yeah, period.
Boy, were we tested. But let me.
Is that why I hate tests so much now today?
I think so. But I'm going to tell you something. When we share our testimonies with
certain people. I know one time Tracy was telling me that she shared her testimony with this lady that she was just walking with.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Sometimes you put it in your heart to share with a random mm-hmm. person. And what happens mm-hmm. when you share your testimony with that random person? They've been through mm-hmm. something similar or just mm-hmm. like what you went through. And then you empower them to talk about it. And you know how many clients, because I'm in the hair industry, so, you know, I have people sitting in my chair. I'm rubbing their scalp, and I'm, you know, I might share something with them, and then they start just pouring out, sharing back. And sometimes mm-hmm. people be like, I've never told nobody I was sexually abused when I was a child. But because I shared mm-hmm. it with them, they shared it with me. And then I'm like, was this your first time telling anybody? They're like, yeah, nobody knows. And then they'll tell me who it is because I tell them who it is. And then they're like, mm-hmm. they can't. They're like, honestly, no, I've never told nobody this. And some of them are older than me. They're in their 50s. Wow. And I'm like, you've never told nobody this? You've been carrying this? How?
Right.
Oh, my God.
Right.
How?
Right.
And they're
how? Mental. Right.
So there is strength in our testimony. People find strength from us sharing
yes.
our story. Don't stop
that's
sharing.
It.
Because God will use us.
Absolutely
right. You are
I very much believe in sharing our stories. And you never know who you're going to touch by sharing the story. That's why we have this platform, for people to come on and share their story.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, some people believe in God. I'm very much into God. And yeah. other people don't. I mean, there's all different kinds of people in the world. But
mm-hmm.
at least one thing that I can say is I know this for a fact. And I know certain things that I've had experiences of, which I share in, you know, like in the proper places where people want to hear about God. It's a shame, because it also says in the Bible, if you're ashamed of me, then I'm going to be ashamed
yeah.
of you when it comes
that's
to your
right.
time.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
I mean, I do know
that's
the Bible
right.
because one summer I was, I had to stay in the house for about a month because they caught me drinking. So I read the Bible. I know. I read the Bible from page one all the way through. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, with all the tribes and stuff, I got a little mixed up. That didn't make much sense to me. But I certainly got the rest of it, okay? So I know the Bible, and I believe certain things. Some things don't make sense because the Bible was not written by only one person. And like I was saying to someone not too long ago, if you start telling a person down at the end of the block, a little gossipy thing, we'll put it that way. By the time it goes to the other end of the block, oh, Lord Jesus, it's not the same, is it? You know, everybody's got their own version,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying?
So, yeah.
but I think that if we all believe in the Ten Commandments, and we're not even going to do that 100% right, because if we could, we'd walk on water too, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's just
mm-hmm.
the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And God
mm-hmm.
knows we're not perfect. All right, he knows
mm-hmm.
we're not perfect, but we have
mm-hmm.
free will. And that's why,
mm-hmm.
and I can say this freely, I do not forgive the people that so many, okay, that sexually abused me and beat me because they knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked up to my brother, he's one, and I confronted him. I said, ah, you liked it, and he walked away. So you see,
mm-hmm.
I can't deal with mm-hmm. stuff like that, so I just give it to God. I say, here, you take it. I can't deal with it. I'll deal with other things. It's yours. And that's what keeps me strong.
Nobody's perfect.
Works.
You do a lot of giving back in other areas. God will work on your heart. He'll deal with whatever when he's ready. At this, I tell people, look, healing is a process. You don't have to forgive people today. As long as you're working on your healing and forgiveness and all that stuff, it comes. I tell people, don't feel guilty about it when it comes to, like, that type of level of attacks and that type of level of abuse. I normally tell people, hey, forgive people and move on. But you know what?
Mm-hmm.
If you're still, like, doing all this other stuff to give back to people and you're still working on your healing and you're actively working on it, hey, God's dealing
mm-hmm.
with your heart. He's dealing with your heart how he deals with it. I tell people, don't feel
mm-hmm.
bad about it. Don't let people make you feel guilty. You were a victim of And in this case, in this situation, we're talking about child sexual abuse. That's a very sensitive topic. I tell people it's a process, but you're doing other things for the world, and you're not Superman. So just take one step.
No, I'm doing it for God, honey. I'm doing it for
question.
God. See, that's what we're doing. We're doing God's work, right? That this is our mission. This is what I feel, anyway. This is our mission
I
to go out
agree.
And help other people. Because I work with homeless
that's
people
it.
Too, and I'm supposed to do that over the weekend. I hurt my stomach. I fell. So I stayed home.
Yeah.
I can't lift anything. I tripped over
you
something.
Know what
but anyway, the
back
point.
To lady, I wanted to say this, and it just crossed my mind because that was like my mantra. It's to whom much is given, much is required.
That's
Lord,
true.
To whom much is given, much is required.
As much has been given to us, so much has been required.
Yeah. You can take a little bit away if you want. Oh, my God.
That scripture is loud.
Yes.
Well, he doesn't give us more than we can handle. Remember that. It says that in the Bible, too.
No more. That's it.
Come on now.
Because I know this.
Come on now. God won't give us more than we can handle. And sometimes
no.
I'm like, you know, I'm going to say something quick, y'all. There's times that I've been upset with God, you know, when and we've all gone through very traumatic, different situations. So we can relate. There's been times, I'm sure some of us have been, there's been times that I've been kind of, I was upset with God, like, how, God, why? And then it's like, I remember way before then when I fast forward, in my mind, I remember when I was worshiping God, praising God, and I would lay down on the floor crying, and I would just tell God, use me, Lord, use me as a vessel.
Okay.
Use me as a vessel crying. And then when I fast forward to this drama that I'm going through, I'm like, it was like a
That's
movie.
Funny.
I'm like so mad at myself. I'm like, yeah, you did open your big fat mouth and say, Lord, use me. Well, you a vessel now.
But listen, that's funny you say that, Dr. Nancy. That is funny because all this week, I had to even last week, like, total just repent, like, okay, Father, please forgive me because I know, what, like you're saying, what I asked you for because you know I need to reach the masses. I'm trying to reach millions. I'm trying to really make this impact for your purpose and your glory. And then you start doing all this stuff because God is listening and he's doing and he's acting on our behalf to make these things possible. And it's like, whoa, you know what I mean? Because it's like going, it happens quickly, like he said. I know you do. I mean, I'm watching your whole profile in a way. Like, I'm like, whoa, she has like all this. So I know it had to just come. And when I say the windows, but he said he would open up the windows, pour us out these blessings. He said we won't have room enough to receive them. There's so many things are happening right now that I started to get. And that's how the enemy will do, work on your mind. He started to try to get in my head and, you know, have me like overwhelmed and anxious and starting to feel the anxiety like, wait a minute, you know, like, Lord, oh, wait, I asked you, but wow, you know. So trying to take that hope and turn it into the fear, you know. So we're constantly in a battle, even that's the mental, going back to the mental part. That's the stuff we have. These thoughts will hold us captive. So I had to quickly, like, get that off of me and start standing on the promises because, you know, it's one thing after next. I mean, who would have even thought my son would have – I published his work that he left behind for legacy just to keep going and, you know, started an organization built behind all this stuff and everything is just going just on that wheel. And when I say it's rolling so fast and it's being published work and – you know, in articles and people are reading about it and people are calling, you know, so it's like, wait a minute, you know, I guess I asked for this, you know what I mean, Nancy, I guess I asked for this, God.
I already know. Well, we're coming to
well,
an end,
let me
Brad.
Say something here, honey.
We're
okay.
Closer than 1 minute, Kara. Go ahead. We're closer than 1 minute. I just wanted you to know. Go ahead.
Well, we're out of time. We started
That's
late.
Okay. We, have
we only got 10 seconds left.
We're good.
Well,
I'm thankful to have you guys have me on. Thank you.
Well, we're
You're
glad
welcome.
That you came on. And you know what? We had a pretty good show. Yes, we did. Everything got a little screwed up because she didn't show and all that. But we had a good conversation. Yes, we did. And so I'm thankful for that. That's really what it is, 10 seconds. So good night, everybody. God bless you. Stay safe. And just keep the good work up. Okay?
Thank
God bless.
You.
Good night.
Okay.
God bless.
Good night.
God bless. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.